Welcome to Day Zero Update for March 9th, 2025. I'm your host, Chris Logi.
I'm Brandon Perkins.
And I'm Daniel Victoria.
And yeah, we've got a pretty big week of news here. A bunch of things have happened. We got a few games announcing dates for this summer.
Mm-hmm.
A few more games kind of getting announced. One that was a trick by their publisher.
Mm-hmm.
We'll get to that. We got some industry news, including, let's say, an infamous publisher from the 90s returning.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know, it's not one to be celebrated, at least, though, at least this iteration maybe is better set up for success than the old one. Old group.
Fingers crossed.
Yeah. Then we have some more layoffs that have happened, as well as the new studio being formed. So we'll get to that stuff
mm-hmm.
here a little bit later, but we'll talk about what we've been playing. And I will kick it off here. I've been playing Dynasty Warriors Origins.
Mm-hmm.
I got this in from Gamefly. Basically because, so the funny thing is I got Dragon Age, the Veilguard, from them probably a few weeks before they announced it was going to be on PS Plus.
Mm.
So I sent that back and managed to get Dynasty Warriors Origins.
Mm-hmm.
And this is pretty much the first I'm playing of an actual Dynasty Warriors games, not like a demo or anything.
Yeah.
Though from what the way this is happening here, it seems like it's probably a bit different than the usual game in the series.
It really is, because the big difference between the regular Dynasty Warriors and Dynasty Warriors Origins is that you're basically just playing one dude through the whole game.
Yeah.
Whereas, like, in the other Dynasty Warriors games, you're playing a bunch of characters depending on which faction you decide to go with.
Yeah. Because with this game, it is very much an origin story of the Three Kingdoms
mm-hmm.
stuff. You're playing this guy who is nameless, has lost his memory and all that, and has no clue really what's going on with him, other than he has, you know, actual skills for fighting and whatnot. Sort of shows up in this town that is being sieged by the Yellow Turbans. We're basically taking as much of the people's food as possible.
Yeah.
Leaving them to starve. And he and a few others show up. I guess Liu Bei and his two brothers.
Yeah. Guan Yu and Zhang Fei. Yeah.
Yeah. They show up and stand up for the people, and
mm-hmm.
ends up leading to the four of you kind of partnering together for this makeshift army.
Mm-hmm.
of sorts to try to stop the Yellow Turbans, and you kind of go through some initial stages of fights that are all pretty quick, all said,
mm-hmm.
Before you get to like one big one that involves a big map, that kind of thing. And yeah, they have a whole mechanic of going to these inns, and you get letters that have like rewards for helping out people and that kind of stuff, as well as that's where you start introducing more of the mechanics. Like you get the this material that you can turn into these gems that essentially add some sort of extra stat perk or whatever. Like mine, essentially every 100 KOs I get a chunk of health back to refill my health bar. And there's like 5 of them total, I think, but that is perfectly fine, because as you get dupes, they essentially power those up.
Mm.
So it'll tell you like, oh, you need 3 to level this up kind of thing. So you're kind of just pumping that into there and seeing them go up. And there's a few different ones there. Some that boost your attack, some that boost your parrying skills and all this other stuff. In general, but you also have weapons that you're paying attention to, and you start initially with a sword and work your way to spears, where I'm at right now for that. And those upgrade or level up as you fight, and you're kind of improving your proficiency with them, which then adds more combos and such that you can do with them, which the hilarious thing is the first upgrade you get. It's like, oh, you can now do a 6-button combo of just hitting square over and over again versus the 4-button combo. And then, you know, you get some additional stuff as you go. There's skill trees that are involved as you get skill points. And where I'm at now, they've introduced challenges. You get like challenges that you can unlock doing stuff in fights, that kind of stuff. They give you extra skill points. And you're kind of working your way through all these things to make your character a bit stronger, as well as, you know, having a general level up system, a stat system, essentially, to that. So they do recommend you kind of switch between your different weapons and, you know, kind of bring them up. Not necessarily all at the same level, but definitely not to just focus on one and abandon the others, essentially. You kind of want to be well-rounded, but yeah, where I'm at, we've teamed up with the I forget what his name is, but we teamed up with another group that is working on countering the yellow turbans to that. And yeah, that's we're kind of more of a formal part of their military, and in the gameplay sense, the big fights I went through on that, we essentially, there was sorcery going on, because of course there is at this point, that initially was just having a bunch of these sort of ghostly enemies show up that nobody could defeat. But you have the, what are they called? Like the, it's almost like an eagle vision skill. Essentially, mm-hmm. You can shift your vision to like an overhead vision and see things that you can't normally see. So like you see this, essentially this weird like purple smoke wafting in from an area, and you just take that, like go over in that direction, and you'll find, you know, a pot that's feeling some sort of whatever dust or something that is tricking everybody into seeing things. Not necessarily that these can't hurt you, but the, like the second areas you get to, there's these big like tornadoes essentially going on all over the place. So you're kind of running around and trying to break the pots and stop that from happening and save the officers and such that you're working with.
Mm-hmm.
There's a lot of that kind of stuff. And the, they do let you lock on to the officers, make it a little easier to know where they're at in the chaos of all the stuff that's going on. They do have some neat stuff going on with some of these officers that can like inspire their troops that are around them and send them to do attacks. And you see like they're almost like a ghostly form of themselves that is much bigger.
Mm-hmm.
I guess to show like their presence, their skill, essentially, in an interesting way. So yeah, it seems neat. So I'm definitely going to keep playing some more of this.
Mm.
But it's been pretty neat. And kind of also the neat thing is that it's the campaign, you're kind of actually walking on the, across the landscape as your character, as they're kind of almost like a kaiju version of it, towering over the settlements and whatnot. And along there, they have, you know, skirmishes show up that you can partake in for grinding purposes or whatever. There's also little things you can find in the environment. Some of that material you can use to turn into gems or what they call old coins that I haven't found what the use is for that yet. But yeah, it's a pretty neat game. It's interesting to try one of these, and the big battles are generally pretty easy so far. It's not been too complicated in the way they set everything up. So I'm curious to see how that stuff progresses. But yeah, I'm still like 2 or 3 hours in, so I wouldn't be surprised if it gets more complicated and all that, especially since I only have like 2 weapons I'm using and all that. So yeah, that's been Dynasty Warriors at Origins.
Yeah,
so that's one I'll be playing some more of. I've also been playing more Power Rush Simulator, as the new DLC has been out for the past week since the 4th. which is Wallace and Gromit themed,
mm-hmm.
Which I have finished all of it, and it is a very cool set of jobs. Basically, in a bit of a difference from the other DLCs, you are a robot that Wallace has made, mm-hmm. That he calls Wash Lad. And you're shorter than you normally are in these games.
Mm-hmm.
So it makes it a little bit interesting that you kind of have to do a little more efforts in the platforming stuff to get around the map and get up on top of, you know, tables and whatnot for that, which is an interesting way to go. Like all the messages that Wallace has to you are basically in the form of like him giving you, you know, like computer directions in a sense, which usually it's him giving you a direction and then revising it to make sure that you're not completing the wrong things for the directions he's giving. But yeah, if you know your Wallace and Gromit stuff, you're watch the specials and the two movies and all that. So there's a lot of a good fan service in this. The first map is inside the house. You have like the train track that's set up from the one special. Though not set up in the same way, but it has a functioning track, which I'd say this is probably the best DLC for things you can interact with, as it's one that has a lot of little machines and such that you can turn on and off and all that kind of stuff. So that's been a fun part of this. The second job is outside, out front, where you are tasked with cleaning up the front yard and Gromit's doghouse and a number of other machines that have malfunctioned in some way and caused a lot of dirt and such to cover the front of the house and the yard and all that. Then from there, you go and clean up the basement area, which has all the machines from the job where they were shearing sheep and creating, you know, wool sweatshirts and such like that.
Mm-hmm.
The fourth one has vehicles, which has three vehicles and the techno trousers from the one special there. Those are all fun. There's a plane. There's two like big vans that have been used in some of the specials and whatnot. So, and the last one is the moon rockets, which is set on the moon. So you're cleaning up the space around there, the ship itself, and the inside before you know, supposedly fly back. And the robot that sticks around on the moon and just skis is up there as well. So, yeah, that's a very fun set of maps and a lot of fun stuff there. As a big fan of Wallace and Gromit, this was a lot of fun to check out. So that's been a fun thing to get for this week. And the last thing I've been putting some time into is a PC game called Mini Shoot Adventures. Yes, it does have the weird apostrophe at the end of Mini Shoot that I don't think has ever been explained as part of the title. It's not like it's a misprint, like it's supposed to be Mini Shoots Adventures or anything. That is just the way that they spell it. This is essentially a dual stick shooter Zelda game where you are in the ship that shoots in, you know, any direction around you that you can aim with your right stick. And you're kind of exploring this map, running into dungeons and collecting some currency and such, as well as when you beat enemies, you pick up these little gems that fill up a meter. And when that meter fills up, you get one skill point you can spend on your skill points, your skill list. It has various things that affect your shot for, you know, how strong your shots are, your distance, your range you can do with them, firing rates, all that kind of stuff. The nice thing is that you can take the points spent on that if you want to reapportion them to other places. If you realize, like, oh, this isn't necessarily what I need, but I definitely want, you know, way more damage, you want to sacrifice your points you put into other places, you can do that.
Mm-hmm.
Where I'm at right now, I'm like 2 or 3 hours in. So I am, like, I've beaten one of the four big bosses. I'm still working on a lot of the side stuff there. And maybe the one knock I have against it is that the map is kind of hard to parse at times. It's not necessarily a map that fills in as you explore outside the areas you have.
Mm.
You have to find map pieces that fill it in. So there's been chunks of time, you know, 20, 30 minutes or whatever, I've been going around areas that are not on the map, so I don't really have any thing there that can tell me, like, where I'm supposed to go.
Mm.
And I've definitely been in some areas where I definitely need something to break certain things to actually progress, and I have not been able to find them because they're off the map or whatever, or I missed something on another part of the map. So just figuring out, like, what you're supposed to be doing can be part of the challenge here. But yeah, along the way, you're kind of fighting lots of enemies, and they, you know, get very kind of bullet hell kind of patterns going on as you're taking them on. Luckily, dying doesn't really penalize you too much in this game. You do respawn back at your base, but if you're in dungeon, there's a spawn point at the front that you come back, and at least the nice part of it is that enemies you kill kind of respawn, so you can kind of grind a bit in this game for those skill points, so a little bit of that at least is a little bit more friendly to you to make it easier to get some extra skill points and spend that on things that might interest you.
Mm.
So yeah, this has been fun so far. Definitely going to keep playing it. It's only on Steam at this point. I wouldn't be surprised if it comes to consoles at some point.
Mm.
But yeah, this is been a fun game to have on the Steam Deck.
Mm.
So yeah, that's been pretty much what I have been playing. So how about you, Brandon? What have you been doing?
Well, I finished two games this week. First and foremost, I finished Trails Through Daybreak 2. And yeah, that game definitely, as far as the ending goes, it absolutely does stick the landing at the end. I will say, though, the one thing about this game that does sort of have me interested is this, going forward to where the sequel is. And for those who don't know, the sequel actually came out last year, meaning, you know, it probably won't be till 2026 at the earliest that we'll get to play it. The whole sort of thing, the whole, like, thing about this particular game, and honestly, it kind of does play into some of the stuff that happened in the previous game, has to do with, like, time travel and, like, sort of shifting between timelines in order to, try and start certain events from happening. Because basically what happens is every so often something awful will happen. Someone in the party will die, or the whole party will die, or somebody that you really care about will die, or something like this. And it triggers this effect where it then has it so you can go back in the timeline so that you can redo, you know, events so that, you know, that won't happen. But the thing is that every time you go back, all the characters suddenly come back with all of the knowledge of what happens if those particular events occur, which, if you think about it, basically means that basically everyone in this group experiences themselves dying like 2 or 3 times, which is somehow unfazed by it, but that's another thing. But it goes into this whole idea of, like, this appears to, you know, since it only seems to be limited to them and it all sort of ties into the Genesis, I'm starting to wonder if, like, Calvard has something to do with, like, is it caught in, like, some sort of weird time thing? And then we find out that, you know, the main sort of antagonist of the game is in fact linked back to the group of revolutionaries that started the revolution that founded the Calvard Republic. And I'm starting to wonder, does this have something to do with, like, Sheena Dierk and all the stuff that they did at the start of the country's founding? And I'm also really starting to wonder if it's got something to do with Professor Epstein. And I'm wondering if Sheena and Epstein and Agnes are somehow all connected. So, you know, there's just all these possibilities. So I'm really excited to find out what's in store with the next game, and hope to get it sooner rather than later. But on top of that, I also finished the first part of Lost Records Bloom and Rage. And, you know, again, it was a pretty solid Don't Nod game. There were definitely parts of it that come off, you know, a little gnarmy, I guess. But, I mean, same thing with Life is Strange. It was kind of part of the charm. That said, and I think Dan Reb more or less said the same thing, because of the events in this game are, like, so truncated, it's kind of hard to develop any kind of connection with these characters. You know, with Max, you know, and Chloe and all of them, and Life is Strange, you know, you played that game over a series of chapters that were, like, spread over, like, every couple of weeks. So, you know, it was sort of easy to develop a connection with them. But because of the way this game is made, that connection is a lot more difficult to make. But it definitely does, like, have, like, this really fascinating sort of supernatural element to it that ended up going in a direction I didn't really think it was going to go. Because, like, a bunch of the game that they're talking about there's this Wendigo that is about, but that's not really what the supernatural element ends up being. It's something else entirely. And, of course, it ends with one hell of a gut punch and a real, you know, cliffhanger to end the story, the first part of the story on. And, yeah, so, you know, that. I finished that, and,
yeah, the rough part about that gut punch is that it actually felt like it raised the stakes, and I was like, oh, I waited, like, 4 hours for this. But
yeah. Although the game does, you do kind of start to realize that something's up with her, like, earlier on, that something might be wrong with her. I'm not going to say who, but when you play the game and you pay attention, it's like, yeah, something's off about this kid, and I'm not sure why. And then at the very end, you find out, oh, that's why. And it makes her actions make a bit more sense, because otherwise she just kind of acts like a little demon child. But last but not least, in the meantime, I've been playing Stardew Valley again as well. Still going through that, and I don't have it written on here, but I also played a little bit of a Jedi Survivor last night. I was finally able to get that to work, because I had already gotten it through my PS Plus subscription, but it kept crashing when I tried to play it, so I had to re-download it. And it's acting fine now, but, you know, whatever. But yeah, that's what I've been playing. So, Daniel, what about you?
Yeah, I played a little more Monster Hunter Wilds. It's good to have everybody out in the open, and yeah, just go ahead and charge you some time through there. As I mentioned before, I rolled through credits weeks ago, so, you know, finally doing the real stuff just makes it a little bit harder. Other than that, not too much. I also did start, finish, and platinum Like a Dragon Pirate Yakuza in Hawaii. Mm. Absolutely loved it, but I will say, like, yeah, this game is a B game through and through. You can tell that, you know, maybe this game could have started out as DLC for Infinite Wealth, but it ended up just being its own self-contained title. And much like a Dragon Gaiden before it, it does go back to its roots with the action-style beat-em-up combat system. And yeah, like, you'll feel right at home with Majima if you've played Yakuza 0. So the main thing here, I mentioned it last week, he has amnesia. And it all happened when he got shipwrecked and all of a sudden got put on that island. I will say, like, this game can be short. I spent around 30 hours. Of course, I platinumed it, but it probably takes around, like, close to 20 hours to actually just finish it. That being said, it's really, really easy to jump off in the deep end and do the various side quests there are in the game, and, like, they actually do help you. The main thing that you get are money and these pirate points that you eventually spend on abilities or ways to upgrade your ship. Because there are two main ways of combat here. It's, you know, the original Yakuza combat system, and then you have the ship battles. And the ship battles are pretty fun, for the most part. When you're going against other pirates, what you want to do is take out the headship, and then after that, it turns into just an all-out war on deck of these ships. Sometimes you'll run across them on the world map, and that's where you just want to clear out all the ships as fast as possible. And it's pretty simple. It kind of feels like Star Fox, except in the ocean, where you know you have access to a machine gun. You can also put on some cannons and harpoons and whatever it may be with the different ways to upgrade your ship, and it all ends up being really fun, you know. Having just played a game like East 10 Nordics, where the ship travel was a little rough, this one definitely felt like, you know, it was more polished. It's not quite Wind Waker, but you know, it's definitely there as far as, like, you know, the desire to go ahead and explore the open seas. Because what happens is you're going to reach a point in the game where you want to explore every untouched island, because, you know, you're a treasure. You're going to pirate. You're going to find treasure, and these treasures are eventually going to help you on your quest as well as side quests too. So that was definitely a fun thing. It was pretty cool to see that the main protagonist is Samoa Joe. For those of you who are into professional wrestling, and he was quite a menacing enemy, and it just goes to show, you know, Yakuza's adherence to using professional wrestlers, because they've had a lot of New Japan wrestlers as well as, you know, AEW, Ring of Honor now. So as a wrestling fan, I definitely appreciated that. But yeah, the platinum was what was cool to get. Basically, it's not doing every side quest, but what you want to do is you want to recruit as many people onto your pirate crew as you can. You also want to find a select amount of treasures, and you also want to go on this certain side quest where you end up going against some of the tougher pirates there. So yeah, that was definitely a fun experience. The main thing that kind of made the game a little bit of a drag is Chapter 2 is really long, and the reason why it's long is because it pretty much sets up the foundation for what this game is. So when you start the game, you know, you end up on you know, the island he's shipwrecked at, and then all of a sudden you get the pirate ship, and you know, unlock the ability to go to various parts in the world, and you'll go to places like Nele Island. You'll go to so Nele Island was actually in Infinite Wealth. You'll go to Honolulu, Hawaii, and basically the entire map from Infinite Wealth is there, and you'll actually come across some of the same people that you've met during the various side stories in the game. So, you know, there's this one guy who does a theater show with certain caged animals like tigers and bears and whatnot. And what happens in the side quest is they always end up escaping, and you have to end up fighting them. And then normally after you finish all these side quests, they end up being a part of your crew. So yeah, that's a pretty cool thing that's there. You know, going back to the battle system, as I mentioned, like, it goes back to the original Yakuza games, and you have access to, you know, Majima's regular fighting style, and then also you have his swashbuckler pirate style, where he ends up using two cutlasses in order to fight. And it's very bare-boned compared to a lot of the other Yakuza games, where you have access to at least three classes. Here it's just two, but still it's definitely a fun way to go around. You also have a cooking system. You have this hookshot that you can use to fish, and yeah, it's a really good time. The main jank I was talking about was, for example, after you complete a battle, sometimes the game will hiccup to go back into, you know, the regular gameplay, but it's nothing, you know, too distracting. And at the end of the day, like a Dragon is a series that, you know, it does take itself seriously, but it also recognizes the fact that it's a video game, and, you know, there's a lot of charm in each of the side quests, and it definitely has that same feel. So, yeah, definitely a fun game. I'll have the review out on Smashpad this week, and, yeah, totally recommend it. Mm. I've also started Split Fiction. This game came out on Thursday. Mm-hmm. This is the latest out of Haze Light and EA Originals from Joseph Ferris. And, yeah, this is one of the games that I was most anticipating, and so far it's definitely scratched every itch. My main thing as I was like watching previews for the game was I wasn't as invested in the story with its characters. So basically you play as these two writers, and then one of them focuses on fantasy and then the other one focuses on sci-fi. And basically they end up being recruited to this thing where they believe they're going to sign publishing deals because, you know, they're writers and that's what you want to do because that's what gets you paid. But it turns out what they signed up for wasn't exactly what they got. They end up being put into these suits where all of a sudden they're transported into different worlds. And Mio, the sci-fi girl, kind of realizes what's going on. And she's like, no, I don't want to do this. This is not what I agreed to. And all of a sudden she ends up in the same silo as the other girl. And that's why you see their stories joined. Over the course of the game, you'll come across these different glitches, and each glitch represents a different world. And what they do here is they actually, you know, go back and forth. You know, you're going to start off in a sci-fi world, and then after you beat that level, you jump into a portal, and then you end up in the fantasy world, and you have to go through that sort of thing. And it does the same It Takes Two thing, where every world you go to ends up sort of changing the genre into the game. And what I really, really loved about It Takes Two, and, you know, eventually what Haze Light's going to be known for now, is the fact that not only do they marry each genre properly, they all feel like very polished games in their own right. So the first sci-fi level gives you access to the sword, and then the other girl actually has the ability to use her powers to control magnets or something similar to magnets, whatever it may be. And it all culminates into this motorcycle ride where you want to try to activate a self-destruct method. So one person is driving the motorcycle, and then the other person has access to a smartphone. And what you want to do is you want to use a smartphone to go ahead and activate the self-destruct protocol. But in the way they did that, it was definitely a hilarious thing. So again, one person is controlling the motorcycle, the other person is controlling the phone. But as they unlock the phone, they end up going through CAPTCHA. They end up having to agree to terms of service. They end up receiving a phone call that they don't want to receive. And then all of a sudden they have to use, like, you know, the registration password in order to get through the right thing. So all these little funny Easter eggs are, you know, they definitely add to the culture of the game. For those of you that played It Takes Two, there's one Easter egg where you actually come across the elephant, and if you shoot off the ear, you get a trophy, and that's just a nod to It Takes Two. There's another level where, they have what's called side stories here. And in these side stories, you jump in the bubble and you do sort of like this mini level in the other world. So, for example, if you're in the sci-fi world and you all of a sudden jump into the bubble, you go into the fantasy world and do something totally crazy. So this was one thing that they showed during the Game Awards, where you end up being a couple pigs. And in this side quest, the pigs are just trying to find a way to open up paths to different areas. And the way you do that is by grabbing apples. And, you know, one pig has the ability to sort of fly and glide. And in order to do that, they have to fart, and they fart rainbows, and it's hilarious. The other pig has the ability to jump high. And all of a sudden, when they use their method, it's, you know, you press the R2 button and they have a spring, and they're kind of like a slinky where they can go ahead and jump around like that. Anyway, this side quest culminates into them being thrown into a grinder. And then after the pigs are grinded, they become hot dogs. And these hot dogs just roll around the table. You can go ahead and jump on the grill, and you can cook your hot dog well or burn your hot dog. And then if you overburn the hot dog, you die. You can also put ketchup and mustard on the hot dog. And all of a sudden, this side quest ends with people eating the hot dogs. And the reason why, like, this is brought up is because Zoe, the girl who writes fantasy, you know, just randomly was writing about hot dogs when she was 7 years old. So they're going through all of these different memories as they go through each glitch, and they find out that, you know, their ideas are being stolen in these machines. So basically the game is a sort of a narrative against AI. And yeah, I'm really enjoying where the story is going so far. I think I'm only about halfway through this. It's a 14-hour game, and yeah, I'm really enjoying it. I will say though, it's a little bit more difficult than It Takes Two was. You know, if you're playing with a really experienced gamer, you'll be okay. But, you know, if you're, like, if you're playing with someone who's a little bit more casual, like, you know, if you're playing with your partner and your partner doesn't know how to play video games, like, that can be a little bit daunting. But if you're playing with someone with some video game skill, it should definitely be a fun way through, and I'm looking forward to playing the rest of the game. And that's about it.
All right, so yeah, let's get to the news. We got subscription news here with Game Pass, where they have announced their releases or their additions for the next week or so, up to like the 18th is the last date they have here. But yeah, for the things that have been up already, they added Monster Train, re-added it. That's been on there for a while and went down, and now they have it coming back again on a console and PC, on Ultimate, PC Game Pass, and Game Pass Standard. Let's see, there's Galactic Care, which is going on Game Pass Standard from since March 5th. Then we got, this one's a new one here, One Lonely Outpost for console and PC for Game Pass Ultimate and PC Game Pass. That's one of those life sims, but set on an alien planet where you're trying to get farming going and all that. Especially genetically modified crops and raising robo livestock. So all that kind of stuff that looks pretty neat. For the things that are coming up here on the 11th, on that'll be Tuesday, Enter the Gungeon will be arriving. Or returning to the Game Pass library for Game Pass Ultimate, PC Game Pass, and Game Pass Standard. That's the one of the big name roguelites there. And here's a new one. Mullet Magic for PC and Xbox Series X and S on the 13th, Thursday. That'll be Game Pass Ultimate and PC Game Pass. I believe that is a first-person shooter that's anime-styled. Like a 90s anime style to it. So that looks neat. And then the last one here is on the 18th, which will be next Tuesday, for PC and Xbox Series X and S, Game Pass Ultimate, and PC Game Pass. This is 33 Immortals. It's a co-op action roguelike where you team up with 32 other players to take down enemies and fight bosses, that kind of stuff. I played a little bit of this in their alpha states, but I've not had a chance to play it much lately, so I'm not sure how much they've changed for more recent versions of it. But this looks really cool. This is the studio that did, trying to see which games they've done previously, Thunder Lotus Games. That's Jotun, Sundered, and Spiritfarer most recently. So that's cool. So that's out on the 18th in early access. So be able to check that out here next week. So yeah, some solid stuff there. Not really a ton that's new, but there's a couple things there that are new. So yeah, there you go.
All right. Yeah, it doesn't really look like there's a. It looks kind of. Other than Mullet Magic, which does look kind of neat, it kind of looks kind of blah.
Yeah. Yeah, it's kind of just a bunch of smaller indies here.
I agree. It's a bit of a ho-hum for me, too.
Yeah. So there's that. We do have other subscription news, particularly on Nintendo Switch Online. For the Game Boy app, they've added two new games here. There's Donkey Kong, also called Donkey Kong 94. That I have not played it before, but I played some of it when it came out on here. And yeah, you kind of run through modified versions of the original arcade game's four stages.
Yep.
And then from there, Donkey Kong takes Daisy and just absconds outside of the bounds of the game and just goes out to the outside world. And you're kind of fighting through, I think, 96 more stages, because I think it's 100 total. Through all that, and they're kind of a puzzle platformer kind of game of a sort, as you're kind of jumping around, and as you get through each set of four stages. They add new mechanics usually to it, and that kind of changes up the next handful of stages you'll have, which is neat. It works out pretty well for the most part. I would say there's some weirdness with the platforming, but it is nice to see this kind of game where falling more than a few feet doesn't kill you instantly. In fact, Mario has some real fun animations that are very much like him landing and rolling a bit as he's like recovering, or cartoonishly like falling and with his legs up in the air as he's out for a bit until he recovers. That kind of thing. That is a pretty cool game from what I've seen so far. So yeah, that's one to check out. Let's see. Then there is Mario's Picross, the first of the Picross games for the Game Boy that did not do well in the West. So they did not bring over the sequel, Mario's Picross 2, or it might have just been Picross 2 on the Game Boy. Just stayed in Japan, as well as the Super Famicom game, which is on the Super Nintendo app. You can check out. It's just in Japanese, but you can navigate most of it just fine. I've beaten this on the 3DS on the Virtual Console there, so I can say it's a good game. Its main knocks is that it does not have the quality of life features that obviously the series would get later on in the like the Picross E games on the 3DS or the Picross S games on the Switch. So there's a lot of potential control issues and the timer's an issue, as well as you got 30 minutes to complete puzzles. If you make a mistake, it takes some time off of there. And so each consecutive mistake you make takes progressively more time off of the clock for you to complete it. So that can be a challenge there. But the being a Nintendo Switch Online game, you can just rewind anytime you make a mistake. So you can kind of undo any of that stuff. But it starts with 5x5 puzzles that I would say do not make use of the game screen as well as it should have. They keep the box at the grid at the same ratio that it is when you get to, you know, 10x10 and 15x15 puzzles. But now you're just seeing much less, and then they have big text box and all that on there that are taking up more real estate, that kind of stuff. But you know, it was the first one of these, so they were still figuring out all the things they should do. But yeah, that's a solid game. It's just rough around the edges because it's the first one of these. But if you want to check that out, that's those are some pretty good games there.
Yeah, I do remember playing the Donkey Kong 94. And I in general, I kind of remember it, like, because I'd played the original Donkey Kong, like, both in arcade form and on the Nintendo, and just, for some reason, the Donkey Kong 94 version, it felt kind of bland, confirmed to the other, and I'm not sure if it's just because, you know, it was a Game Boy game or whatever, but, yeah, it didn't really do much for me.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, like, Donkey Kong 94, you know, has that traditional Donkey Kong arcade gameplay, but the thing that it did for me was that I felt like the original Donkey Kong in the arcade, or, you know, old NES, whatever you played it on, it had a bit of rough lag on there, whereas Donkey Kong 94 felt more responsive to me. And it, to me, like, this is what really set up games like Mario vs. Donkey Kong in the future. But yeah, like, again, it's a really, you know, standard update this month. The main thing is I didn't know Mario's Picross was a thing, so that's interesting, but that's about it.
Yeah. But yeah, Donkey Kong, I think, was the first Super Game Boy game. I'll have to work on
that. Yeah, I think it was.
So it's got some nice color to it here, if you have the Super Game Boy thing turned on. Or the Game Boy Color thing, I think, is what it's actually showing. I don't think they have the Super Game Boy Color color scheme stuff support here?
Yeah, I don't think. Yeah, at least not yet.
Which led to just weird things in the, I think, the Donkey Kong Land games. Mm-hmm. Where it's just like, everything that moves is some shade of brown.
Yep.
This is like, oh, this is kind of trying to emulate Donkey Kong Country's look, but everything's brown like shit.
Mm-hmm.
So there you go. But yeah, we got some dates for things. We got the Humble Games Showcase 2025 happening later this week on the 12th.
Mm-hmm.
Whatever's left of Humble Games, their publishing label, they are... They'll have some games coming. Yeah, this will be at 9 a.m. Pacific, 12 p.m. Eastern time.
Mm-hmm.
Let's see. They will be featuring... let's see. New reveals from Lost Skies and Monaco 2. Yeah, because Monaco 2 is part of the Steam Next Fest with the demo. So that's happening at some point. They are... having a new reveal from upcoming 2.5D JRPG Threads of Time,
mm-hmm.
Which I looked up a bit on that, and that looks pretty neat. Let's see, updates from the recently released On Your Tail and Wizard of Legend 2.
Yep.
I guess that's a release date on the Switch for On Your Tail.
Yeah.
Because the PC version's been out for a bit, but the Switch version's just been getting delayed a bunch, so
mm-hmm.
I assume it's that. Maybe it'll be coming to the other consoles as well. Mm-hmm. At some point, but there's a toe-tapping new look at Billy Bust Up.
Mm-hmm.
Then two never-before-seen world premieres, and potentially more stuff, so that'll be interesting to see what indie stuff they have on the horizon here that they are publishing. It does look a little weird when they had their whole shake-up and getting rid of most of the staff to replace them with like a third-party consultancy company, whatever that is. But yeah, I'm curious to see what ends up happening with this showcase. But yeah, there you go. That's your most, the one that's happening the most soon. We do have a couple more things here. Just earlier today, the Kojima Productions had their big South by Southwest, whatever panel. That I was pretty sure was going to show a new trailer for the game and a release date, and ended up both happening with a big 10-minute trailer that announced that the date will be June 26, pretty soon, in a few months. The trailer, if you do not know anything about Death Stranding, that's probably pure nonsense in a trailer.
Mm-hmm.
For everything they're talking about there. But yeah, it's... It looks really good, showing off more of the various new characters and returning characters and such,
mm-hmm.
including one that seems to be a clear reference to Solid Snake.
Yep.
There's a character that puts on a bandana exactly like Solid Snake does.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, let's see what else here. They got... They announced all the editions of the game. There's a big collector's edition with the big, a 15-inch statue, a 3-inch Dollman figurine, a bunch of art cards, collector's box, a letter from Hideo Kojima, as well as a bunch of in-game items.
Mm-hmm.
And all that. Digital Lux Edition gets you... the batch of in-game items and 48-hour early access to the game. And yeah, the pre-order items and then just the base game, it's $70. Get you the game and the pre-order items. It seems like they're also going to do an orchestral series with a bunch of music from, I assume, both games.
Mm-hmm.
That'll be at Sydney Opera House, so that'll be interesting to see. That's the first one, and then they're doing others around the world. And then they got some new screenshots here.
Yep.
Check out alongside the trailer so you can see how good that game looks and how weird it's going to be.
Yeah. Obviously, I've said before, I love the original Death Stranding, so I'm definitely anticipating the sequel.
Yeah.
Yeah, the original Death Stranding didn't do much for me, but the few trailers that we've seen, aside from the weirdness, it also seems like there's more action that could buy me back in, because, you know, I definitely want to try stuff that Kojima makes, but I'm not that excited, but I'm definitely going to keep my eye on it.
Yeah. So, yeah, that'll be out this summer in a pretty surprisingly quick thing, quick release for this year.
Mm-hmm.
But, yeah, I think Sony is going to have Ghost of Yotei later in the year, so that'll be a pretty interesting couple of games there to have.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, we got that. And the other big game that got announced this week, Tony Hawk's Pro Skater 3 Plus 4. That is going to be out July 11th for everything, Xbox, Switch, PlayStation, and PC. This seems like the big thing here is that it is, let's see, it's going to be $50 and features the whole campaign for Tony Hawk's Pro Skater 3, but 4 is getting remade into stages that fit the 2-minute format. They're kind of getting rid of the classic campaign that they had, which was more dropping into these bigger maps that you kind of walked around and talked to NPCs and got challenges from them.
Mm-hmm.
Oftentimes being like 2-minute challenges in themselves, as well as I think some other moves and such, like being able to sketch behind vehicles and all that kind of stuff. Mm. So that's been kind of the big contention here around this is people that aren't happy that they are changing the campaign just to fit the way that, you know, the first collection worked and the way that the campaign works in Tony Hawk's Pro Skater 3, which I think I'm in that camp of not being a huge fan of 4, but the career mode should be presented as is and not changed in this way.
Mm-hmm.
'Cause I think if you have a problem with that, as far as, you know, Activision Blizzard and fitting those two different campaigns together in this, and it's like, then you don't have to make this collection this way.
Mm-hmm.
There are other options they could have done. Maybe even like, hey, put in the GBA games in there. Let people play those as well. Mm-hmm. As the big HD remake of Tony Hawk's Pro Skater 3, which is, you know, unironically one of the greatest games of all time. If you go look up the top rated games on like Metacritic and whatnot, mm-hmm. That is up there. And it's not a joke that it's up there. It's the pinnacle of this series, just pure gameplay wise. And yeah, it is a fantastic game. But yeah, this will be on Game Pass as well. So that's probably where I'm going to play it.
Mm-hmm.
And not really buy it up front. So. Yeah, that's, and they're also doing a bunch of crossover stuff. If you buy the digital deluxe edition,
mm-hmm.
you get like Doom Slayer and Revenant playable skaters and skate decks related to those characters, additional songs included with the original soundtrack, a bunch of stuff like that. There's a $130 collector's edition that has a full skateboard deck in it with a printed Tony Hawk autograph. I'm curious if that's an autograph using his blood as ink, as he's done before with stuff. We'll see, but yeah, if you pre-order for any of the editions, you get access to the Foundry demo in June and the Wireframe Tony shader at launch. I assume they'll release the demo outside of that at some point, but give people that pre-order early access to it.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. We'll see. I guess you also get 3 days of early access with, that's the deluxe and the collector's edition. So you can pay for that as well. So there you go.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Definitely an awesome announcement. I enjoy the series. I wouldn't say I'm a huge fan. You know, most of it actually came from playing Tony Hawk's Pro Skater 2 on, believe it or not, the GBA. That's actually one of the better games on the Game Boy Advance. But yeah, I also really enjoyed the 1+2 remakes, and I'm very pleased to see that they're doing 3 and 4. I've never actually played either of those games when they originally came out. As Chris mentioned, Tony Hawk's Pro Skater 3 is believed by many to be the pinnacle of the series. Its Metacritic is, definitely way up there. And yeah, I've never played it, so I'm definitely excited to get my hands on it. And, you know, it was thought that this series was dead in the water, especially after Vicarious Visions was, you know, sort of shut down by Activision, and, you know, everybody was put on Call of Duty and whatnot. So it's good to see that, you know, the game still got made. Obviously, Iron Galaxy is behind it, and they were the ones who, I believe, ported the games to PC, and they did a wonderful job with that. So definitely looking forward to, you know, this game just pretty much being what 1 and 2 was, but even better because of 3. And again, never tried it, so I'm excited to try it out. And Game Pass is definitely a win there, but, you know, it being an Activision game, that was going to happen.
Mm. Yeah. So yeah, it'll be interesting to see how this collection turns out. And yeah, it is not one of the internal studios at Activision Blizzard. Mm-hmm. It is Iron Galaxy that is working on this.
Mm.
So I'm curious to see how well it turns out. But yeah, that'll be on Game Pass and all the other storefronts on July 11th. So you can check it out later this summer.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, let's see here. Monster Hunter Wilds. We got some industry news here. Monster Hunter Wilds has reached 8 million copies sold in 3 days, which is the fastest selling game in Capcom history.
Yep.
A huge deal here. Just shows that, you know, focusing on the consoles has been great for Monster Hunter.
Yep.
Monster Hunter World is Capcom's best-selling game ever.
Mm-hmm.
And I was looking up their list of their best-selling games that they have, and they include, I think it's like 21 million units total for just World, and then they include the bundle that includes Iceborne, and then it bumps up to 28 million copies sold.
Mm-hmm.
I believe Iceborne itself is at like 15 or 16 million units sold just for that DLC,
mm-hmm.
Which is more than most Monster Hunter games. I think Rise would be the only one that sold better than that.
Yep.
So, yeah, this is a big launch for them. I think their first one they've had on PC at launch with the consoles. So everybody altogether on PlayStation, Xbox, and PC has kind of combined to make this their best launch ever.
Mm-hmm.
Which should mean they get to work and put more content in this game, because it seems like the big criticism people have is that the first good chunk of the game, that is the like tutorial campaign, is easy for most everybody, but the people that are very new to the series, so people are going to be waiting for more content to come to the game, and probably some options to make it harder for people.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, there you go.
Yeah. Also, it's funny because there was, unfortunately, this was another one of those games that got caught in the woke culture war nonsense. And, you know, like, if you haven't figured out what the grift is and how it works by now, they'll essentially go all in on this narrative of, like, it's, you know, it's all woke and filled with weird, you know, identity politics stuff that they go, you know, blah, 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 blah. It's all of the, obviously none of that stuff actually matters to whether or not the game is going to be good or not, but that's sort of how the grift works. And depending on how well the game goes, they either, you know, try to pretend that they never said that in the first place, but if the game does badly, then they will say it did badly because of woke stuff and all this crap. Obviously, the game's doing really well. It sold 8 million copies in its first 3 days. That's a hell of a number. So now you've got all these, you know, grifters now kind of scrambling, trying to come up with what the narrative's going to be, and it's just kind of hilarious to watch.
Yeah. Yeah, let's see here. We got that doing well. We did have a game that got announced here, RoboCop Rogue City Unfinished Business, which I believe is a standalone expansion to a very good kind of silly first-person shooter that was the first game. They did a good job of capturing the sort of ridiculous you know, world that RoboCop is in, and kind of doing a lot of fun stuff there. and make it a more competent game than I think people would have expected.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, Unfinished Business is sort of their standalone expansion that is, I guess it's set into Omni Tower, as it talks about. Mm-hmm. Omni Tower is their fortress. Violence is their language. Basically, mercenaries all the way to the top of the tower, enforce the law amidst the chaos. I don't know if that's going to be maybe a roguelite kind of thing, or just whatever is going on here, combat challenge kind of thing. But that looks interesting. Here's to see some more of this. But yeah, I've enjoyed my time with the original game. So yeah, looking forward to more of this. It's out this summer at some point on PS5, Xbox Series X and S, and PC. So I'm curious to see some more of that when it's ready. So there you go for that. Let's see. The other game that got announced, a bit of a rug pull. Konami had this showcase happening earlier this week before the collection of 1 and 2 released to make some announcements and such. I think they announced the new anime as well as some other stuff. But they also announced Suikoden Starleap.
Mm-hmm.
That looks really nice and all that, and people saw when it's when they got to see more of it that it is mobile only, and it's also going to have gacha monetization to it.
Mm-hmm.
And just kind of very much was not what people wanted. People were hoping for a new game in the series, which I guess story-wise they very much say that this exists in the mainline history of the series, but it has like a big orchestral arrangement of the soundtrack and full voice acting for the main story, but now it's existing on a platform that many of the people that would be interested in a new Suikoden thing may not want to actually play it on.
Yeah.
And so that's kind of the fun monkey paw part of this.
Yeah, it's a cinch. This is honestly, sadly, very, very typical for Konami. So I'm not terribly surprised that this would happen.
Yeah.
Yeah. At the same time, you know, I do like them, you know, going ahead and dipping their toes wherever it may be, because, you know, Suikoden is back. I grabbed the games. I've never played them yet, and I'm looking forward to eventually diving in. But, you know, with it being back, of course, they're going to want to be able to, you know, take advantage of this, you know, go ahead and call it exploitation. But at the same time, like, while it may not be something that we're interested in, there are plenty of people in Japan and, you know, overseas in general who love playing this kind of game. And if this is what ends up being what funds another, you know, quote unquote, real Suikoden game, I'm all for it. Is this for me? No. But at the same time, I'm glad they're not sitting on their hands either.
Mm.
Yeah. So yeah, that's happening at some point. I don't think they have any time frame for when it'll be out, but that'll be something you can check out.
Mm-hmm.
But I think that is it for the new announcements.
Yep.
I do have a story here that Sony has announced a new beta program, as they're calling it, for PlayStation.
Mm.
This is sort of similar to programs that like Microsoft has for testing out firmware updates and such. This also applies to games and let's see, PlayStation app features, and even maybe some user experience upgrades for the main PlayStation website. So you can, when you sign up, say like, "Hey, I'm more interested in games and maybe the OS updates, but not the other stuff," and have that be the thing you're working on. Get considered in for the future. It seems good to have that for people, because they've mostly just relied on sending people to a specific page to sign up whenever they had OS beta program stuff going on in the past, and you just hope you are on the list for future betas or whatever. But yeah, it's at least something to kind of make that a bit of a more central place to go to sign up for that stuff. So it'll be neat to see how that progresses for the future.
Mm.
Yeah, it seems pretty cool. I signed up for it, And yeah, like after you get in, you pretty much sign an NDA. So, you know, well, once I eventually do try out some stuff, I won't be able to talk about it. It's definitely a cool way to go ahead and get the community involved, and hopefully we see some cool stuff out of this.
Yeah.
Cool.
So yeah, there you go for that. We've got more industry news here. The Sumo Group has announced that they have sold one of their subsidiaries, Secret Mode, to a financial investor called Emona Capital. This is one of their publishing labels that they had. They published stuff like Still Wakes the Deep, Turbo Golf Racing, and Eternal Threads. I assume it's still publishing other games like Imperial and Mars Horizon 2, The Search for Life, that are mentioned here. Seems like this investment firm is wanting to get into games publishing because they have investments in a few studios like Relic Entertainment and Amber Studio. So this seems like them expanding their reach into more game stuff, particularly with the publisher that does a lot of indie and sort of mid-size games. So that seems like an all right thing. I don't know. We'll see how it turns out in the future. Maybe they'll turn sour like it tends to with private equity firms, but this seems to not be a private equity firm, so we'll see how that goes. But yeah, let's see. We do have another announcement here. This is of a longtime publisher returning to the industry. I got an email about this before. It was like, oh, do you want to sign up for or you know, sign an NDA to get this news? And they mentioned that it was a publisher from 1987. So I literally just Google search publishers formed in 1987, I think it was. And I was like, Acclaim seems like the one that would be out of this list. And it ended up being Acclaim. Acclaim is returning. I don't think they are being called Acclaim Entertainment or anything. They have a team of people that are running this, and then a board behind that includes one particular name of notes, one Jeff Jarrett at Global Force Entertainment, a company that, yes, that is the wrestler Jeff Jarrett, who
Double J.
has his own entertainment company that was selling gold at one point, and has been involved in, like, his company works in wrestling and general entertainment and game stuff over the years. Though it's not in here. The quote he had was like, I've been working in, wrestling video games since the 90s and on Acclaim stuff. And people figured out like he wasn't really in the Acclaim wrestling games outside of the very last one they made for WWF. I think right before they switched to ECW because they lost the license. And yeah, it's like, yeah, you can technically say this, but you're kind of being a little too showmanship with this, like too much bragging for the minor aspect you brought to any of these games. But he does have knowledge about games and all that. Probably one of the more knowledgeable of the old heads in the industry, which is his benefits here. But yeah, the person that will be running this as CEO is Alex Joseph, who was the CEO of publisher Graffiti Games, that published stuff like Turnip Boy Commits Tax Evasion and Restless Soul. And they have a number of games already signed, mostly going to be focusing on indie games, and as well as some classic franchises, though I don't think the Acclaim name comes with any IPs, because I believe when they went bankrupt, whenever that was, ages ago, I believe they sold off all the IPs as a means of recouping whatever debt they could. So this is likely to be just general signing of licenses, because if you don't know Acclaim as a publisher, they largely worked on licensed games and seem to basically work as cheaply as possible. So very few of those games ever turned out to be all that good.
Mm-hmm.
They kind of had their stride once they were essentially porting Midway games to the consoles, mm-hmm. Where they handled a lot of like NBA Jam and Mortal Kombat, stuff like that. So that largely kind of was them trying to take credit for those games.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas they, you know, did not actually make them. They just ported them. Though they managed to steal the NBA Jam license away from Midway at a certain mm-hmm. point, and made bad NBA Jam games from then on. So if you wonder why that series went shit for a while, it was because Acclaim took it.
Yep.
That's why Midway went to making games like NBA Showtime and you know, other named NBA mm-hmm. games, because they had to, because they had their IP stolen from them.
Yep.
But I don't think you'll have that issue with this this iteration, because they seem like they are more focused on just publishing indie games and publishing classic remasters or remakes or whatever, but we don't really know anything about what they are working on at the moment. But yeah, hopefully they go better than last time, because like their few real things of note was like Turok and the porting those Midway games.
Mm-hmm.
And occasionally found something else of note, but they ran out of business for a reason, because mm-hmm. they were just making the worst of the worst games usually.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I mean, like it was like 2004, 2005 when they ultimately went under, and yeah, as Chris mentioned, like they lost most of their IP in order to be able to recoup some of those funds. At the end of the day, though, you know, them being back, you know, they'll be back in a very different form. But at the same time, I'm happy to see there be another video game publisher. I don't know what their, you know, goals are. It would be nice if, you know, they're publishing indie titles that really deserve it. Like, you know, this guy behind Turnip Boy Tax Evasion, like, I'm pretty sure he doesn't represent them anymore. But at the same time, like, those are good core-on-core indie games. And, you know, that's definitely something that Acclaim can go ahead and build a portfolio off of. You know, hopefully they do it for all the right reasons, and you know, this is gonna open up some jobs, at least for the time being, and that's definitely something I want to see. We're probably not gonna see any, you know, new licensed material from them, but at the same time, I do see them, you know, sort of trying to try the market and see if there is an IP that they can eventually claim as theirs. But that's going to be tough in this era, but hopefully this can result in, you know, more B games that we definitely need. And it's not all just dollar signs for them. So we'll see.
Yeah. I was mm-hmm. looking at their wiki page, and there's a lengthy controversy section here. I forgot they published the first two Burnout games.
Mm-hmm.
And apparently at one point they offered to reimburse any driver in the UK who received a speeding ticket to promote the game.
Mm.
Which the UK government did not like it and got them to cancel that promotional plan. Then there was, they had a promotion to award somebody in the UK £6,000 if they named their baby Turok, mm-hmm. for the release of Turok Evolution.
Yeah.
Which sure is a way to go. They got sued by Mary-Kate and Ashley Olsen over unpaid royalties for the games they made for them.
Mm-hmm.
And they also published BMX XXX, which used to be the Dave Mirra series, and he did not want his name on it once they went the route of putting naked women and whatnot in there.
Mm.
Makes sense. So yeah, it's a company that tried to do whatever they could to get their games out there, essentially.
Hmm.
Yeah, they weren't afraid to get spicy.
And they led an interesting life, but yeah, their biggest successes were due to other people.
Mm-hmm.
Like they made those bad Simpsons games and all the bad WWF games on the Super Nintendo, Genesis, and PS1 and all that.
Mm-hmm.
The ones that try to control like fighting games instead of wrestling games.
Yeah.
The way like THQ and the Aki games were working.
Mm-hmm.
Yuke's and all that. So yeah, they're responsible for a lot of that bullshit. So yeah, there you go. Acclaim is going to exist, hopefully in a better form. We'll see how it goes, but yeah, that's going to be an interesting one to see. What else do we have here? We got some layoffs here. Respawn has laid off some of their staff.
Yeah.
As a result of cancellation of an unannounced game, but seemed likely to be a first-person shooter in the Star Wars universe that they were working on at one point. I think it was part of an incubation team for potential new games, and that just ended up not turning out the way they liked, and that's not a huge surprise. Seems like they may also have been working on a new Apex Legends game called Titanfall Legends, a single-player game set in the same universe as Apex Legends and Titanfall.
Yeah. Just
mashing their names together, I guess.
Yeah.
It also did not turn out into a full project, so kind of having another of these a number of these projects that kind of just didn't pan out. It seemed to have just led to them having to shut down that team and letting those people go. Yeah, no real number here. Just seems like a small amount of people as far as they're willing to say. So, yeah, a shame, but yeah, not really too surprising when you're trying to work on getting some games going and none of them do.
Right.
Yeah, it's always lame to read about layoffs. This is actually around the time where I was laid off by EA last year, so I guess that's their chain. But yeah, is what it is. It's unfortunate to see, but this one is a result of like what you expect when you see a game canceled. So yeah, tough to read.
Yeah. We also have here Ballistic Moon, a studio whose most recent project was the Until Dawn remake, has said that they have effectively closed their doors. They have laid off 20 more employees since last layoff round in September of last year, where they let go around 40 people. And that's largely the vast majority of the studio. So yeah, they're not working on any more patches for the game or anything. It's probably just the few people that have been running the studio, essentially, because it seems like that game did not do super well, and then they probably didn't have any other projects that lined up, any funding or anything like that, that would have kept them going for a while. Yeah, they failed to secure funding or a new publisher for whatever they're working on next, so they essentially had no income coming in. I had to start laying off people, unfortunately. So yeah, not really a huge surprise. Again, if this is a really tough time for getting funding for new projects, and if you fail to find somebody to partner with on that stuff, then it's going to be inevitable that at some point you're going to have to start laying off people and or shutting down, because you're not going to have any sort of income to keep those people working.
Yep. It sucks.
Yep. And yeah, also happening here, Sony has laid off a number of people working in some of their support studios at Visual Arts and a Malaysian studio. No real number mentioned here, just an unknown number of staff laid off at these two particular studios. The quotes they have here is widespread, which I don't know what that means particularly. Seems like probably a decent amount of people from the various groups inside the studios.
Yeah.
But yeah, not really too much else here. But yeah, it seems like part of the fallout of canceling games and having a number of games releasing and such is not having things to do for these studios for the time being, and having to lay people off in the wake of that stuff. So that is going to lead to some shitty news like this. So that sucks, and wish those people the best.
Yeah,
again, like, we're beating a dead horse here. It's never good news, but at the same time, it's just, you know, what you expect when something effectively doesn't work out. The main difference between now and, you know, 5 years ago was, there was always money at the banana stand, and now all of a sudden we're seeing big companies be more tight-fisted, and that's unfortunate because, you know, not every game has to be a 100-hour AAA masterpiece, because that's just not going to happen. And, you know, yeah, you hate to see it in that regard. I love Until Dawn, but, you know, this remake was never on my radar. The game never needed a remake. Mm. I didn't even know they were making a movie until 2 weeks ago.
Yeah.
So, yeah, so it's kind of weird with that stuff going on, but... yeah, hopefully these people land on their feet and wherever they may be.
Yeah. But we're going to end on a positive note here. Visions of Mana director Kenji Ozawa, who worked at Oka Studio and Bandai Namco, has announced he has formed a new studio called Studio Sasanqua, headquartered in Shibuya, Tokyo, saying that the name comes from a flower that blooms in winter. Making games is incredibly rewarding, but it's also incredibly challenging. Games are products, and there are certain things that we need to do because of that. I want to create a place where we can face both of these aspects.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, kind of making a new studio here, and it seems like he wants to try to shield the studio from financial hardship stuff as best he can, to use his own money to fund the studio for the time being, which is very brave to do. But yeah, that's interesting that Visions of Mana and NetEase kind of shutting down Oka Studios led to both of the directors to kind of go elsewhere, one to form their own studio and the other one went to Square Enix. To head up probably a new team to work on more Mana stuff, or whatever RPG stuff that they have. So at least something good came out of Visions of Mana there, other than the game itself being a pretty solid game.
Mm.
Yeah, the moves make sense. Unfortunately, Visions of Mana was a game that that fell off my radar, especially after the very mediocre demo that I played. That being said, though, it definitely did have some promise. I definitely do know some people that enjoyed it. But unfortunately, you know, if you remember, prior to the game's release, NetEase pretty much killed that studio. That being said, Mana is a Square Enix property, so it makes sense that one of their guys goes back to Square Enix and another one establishes their own studio. Hopefully now, with it being completely Japanese-owned, you see some protections there. Just because of the way their laws work. But at the same time, like, nothing is guaranteed. But I would hope that these people are working on, you know, projects that they want to work on and that they end up being great.
Mm.
Yeah. So, yeah, we got some good news there for once.
Mm-hmm.
So we'll see what they are working on probably in a few years. But, yeah, that is going to do it for the show this week. Thank you, Brandon and Danner, for joining.
Always.
We'll be back next week with a new slate of news and more games to talk about.
Mm-hmm.
I'll probably be getting MLB The Show 25. Checking that out. So that'll be fun. What else we got coming out this week? Let's see. Wander Stop's out this week. That's one I want to check out. I'm not sure what else is out this week. But yeah, that is going to be fun to see as the weather kind of starts warming up for once. We're popping up into the 60s for the next 2 days and then going back down as we get no upward trajectory at all times. Looking at the dates here, Rise of the Ronin hits PC on the 11th. Wander Stops out on the 11th. Let's see, Fate Reawakened is out on all the platforms on the 12th. Metalbringer is out on the 12th. Dungeons of Hinterberg is out on the 13th for PlayStation. Let's see. Macho is out on the 13th, a combination first-person shooter and match 3 puzzle game. That's fun. Mullet Madjack is out on Xbox. This Has On Your Tail is out on the 13th, so maybe that's actually happening this time.
Mm.
It doesn't get delayed again.
Mm.
We'll see.
Yeah, I think that's part of Humble Bundle's presentation. So,
yeah, WWE 2K25 is out this week as well. I've heard interesting things. Figure they're like historical matches still having like the Prime branding in the arenas that it shouldn't have. It's like, oh, here's Harley Race holding Prime bottles, and it's like, I don't think that happened. It's like somebody messed up something there. But yeah, that's gonna be the games to keep an eye on. But yeah, thank you all for tuning in. If you enjoy the show, for let friends and family know, and select strangers that also want to see weird bugs in wrestling games, because that's gonna have plenty of that. But yeah, we'll see. And if you're enjoying the show, we'll see you all next week. So yeah, thank you all for tuning in. We'll see you all next time. Have a good one.
Bye. See you.